You are listening to a sermon recorded in 2006 at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Over 2,000 Westerners were interned in 1943 in a refugee camp in northern China called Shantung Compound. They ended up having to organize themselves, and in so doing, they discovered how important work was to community life. Langdon Gilkey, in his memoirs about this camp, wrote, "Work and life have a strange reciprocal relationship. Only if man works can he live. But only if the work he does seems productive and meaningful can he bear the life that work makes possible." What is the place of work in human life? What is meant by work? What are the limits of work? What does work do to the worker? How does a person care for one's soul in the midst of the work environment? This summer, I took a course at Regent Seminary entitled Spirituality and Work. And so I thought I would like to share some of my insights or some of the insights I gained on this topic and raise some questions and also talk about some personal interaction that I had with what I learned. And I hope that somehow there are places in all of your lives where what I share today will be able to intersect with your own experience. To structure my thoughts, I'm using the outline from our summer text, which is called Working, Its Meaning and Its Limits, and it's edited by Gilbert C. Mailander. The outline that I'm using is The Meanings of Work, The Limits of Work, and Rest. First of all, the meanings of work. Dorothy Sayers, in her essay, Why Work, wrote, "Work should be looked upon as a creative activity. Man, made in God's image, should make things as God makes them, for the sake of doing well a thing that is well worth doing." Writers like Dorothy Sayers, Dorothy Sowell, Into Work, Into Love, and thinkers as diverse as Karl Marx and Pope John Paul II describe work as being co-creative with God. God in creation was already at work, and just as God created, so humans are called to create. Sayers wrote that the work itself must be accepted and respected as the medium of divine creation. It's compelling to think this way, because as human beings, we long for work that is meaningful and productive and creative. We would like to identify with our Creator in the words, "And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good." Another way of understanding work was powerfully articulated in the Protestant Reformation. Daily work was seen as a vocation, a calling from God. The purpose of work was not the advancement of self, but rather service to God and one's neighbor. George Herbert illustrated this poetically. "Teach me, my God and King, in all things thee to see, and what I do in anything, to do it as for thee." It was understood that each human being had a calling, a task designed for her. John Calvin put it this way, "Each individual has his own kind of living assigned to him by the Lord as a sort of sentry post, so that he may not heedlessly wander about through life." So even the most mundane task was seen as hallowed. As with all definitions, there's a limit to these. Seeing work as an activity of co-creation with God can cause one to be blind to the effects of sin on human life. Also, how does one distinguish between work and play? Perhaps it could also cause one to think that those who do not work are less than fully human. There are also dangers in viewing work as vocation. The Protestant work ethic, with its emphasis on the necessity of constant labor in one's calling as somehow a sign of personal salvation, can result in an obsessive focus on work and on materialism and on perfectionism. So both these views tend to ignore how hard and often unsatisfying and irksome work can be. In our postmodern world, one can observe two seemingly opposite experiences of work. One is that work is tiresome and pointless. The work week becomes merely an irritating interference with the real life of the weekend. Witold Rybaczynski, in his article Waiting for the Weekend, wrote, "For many people, weekend free time has become not a chance to escape work, but a chance to create work that is more meaningful, work that is recreation, in order to realize the personal satisfaction that the workplace no longer offers." The second postmodern view is that work is a means of getting ahead. Loyalty on the part of both employer and employee has eroded, and this has been replaced by a short-term, work-hard mentality for the longer view of getting ahead and getting more. Simultaneous with these is the sobering reality that for many there is little work to be had, and what there is barely sustains one's existence. There is a fear of being rendered obsolete and of no longer having any value to an employer. What does work mean to you? Do you find meaning in your work? Why or why not? How do you understand Paul's injunction in his letter to the Colossians? Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Secondly, the limits of work. It is little wonder that ER has become America's favorite television show, writes Barbara Defoe Whitehead in an article entitled Lost in Work. An emergency room is the perfect metaphor for today's culture of work. A 24-hour workday, a workplace loaded with dazzling technology, a buzz induced by adrenaline and fueled by caffeine, and an overwhelming sense of urgency and importance. The tyranny of the urgent compels us perhaps more so today than ever before. Portable technologies make it possible to work at any time, from any place, often diminishing one's loyalties to family life, to neighborhood, to community life, to marriage, and to vacation. Perhaps this is precisely because of some of the meanings that have been given to work, that of creation and vocation. One can easily forget the ways in which work ought to have only limited significance. We can't deny the importance of work for the survival of human beings and even for the flourishing of life. But we need to remind ourselves that human beings are not merely workers. There is a rhythm to work. There are, at different stages of one's life, different relationships to one's work. The young child and the older retired person, their experience of work is very different from the person in their 20s or 30s. How attentive one is to work's demands may shift at different moments of one's life, depending on life circumstances, one's needs, and how one views work and leisure. For example, the rhythm of some of my age group that they may feel, it may be influenced by what Mickey Kouse calls BBB, Baby Boomer Burnout. Kouse writes, "I'm 41 and my boss seems to expect me to work like a 25-year-old. This isn't how I'd imagined my life turning out. I mean, I've been working fairly steadily for almost 17 years. I just don't want to work that hard anymore." Work is also limited because one cannot only work. Balance is needed between work and play, between labor and contemplation. The ancients spoke of this rhythm as via activa and via contemplativa. William Deal in Thank God It's Monday wrote, "The biggest gap between our confessed theology of Sunday, which is that we are saved by grace through faith and not by works, and our experience of Monday is work righteousness. Our actions actually betray a belief that our identity and worth are based entirely on what we do and how well we do it." How do you understand the limits of work? How do you experience a balance of rhythms so that you are not defined by what you do? And thirdly, rest. Anyone who works must eventually rest as well, wrote Mylander. Characteristically, we have thought of this as making sure we have time for play. But the concept of rest, particularly as God commands it, goes much deeper than play. We have a need to stop and experience Sabbath rest. George Herbert, in his poem, The Pulley, implies that the need for human beings to rest is a divine gift. It reminds us that no matter how valuable our work may be, work is not what we have been created for. Mylander continues, restlessness, the need to rest not just from labor, but also from longing and anxiety, is the pulley that draws us toward God. Eugene Peterson wrote, if you cannot afford to take one day a week for rest, you are taking yourself too seriously. Just as God rested from labor, so too humans need to rest from labor. Wayne Cordero, a pastor of New Hope Church in Hawaii, recently spoke about rest at a leadership conference. He asked the participants, are you working for rest or from rest? He said that too often we work until exhaustion takes over and we're forced to slow down. He challenged his listeners to first schedule times for rest in one's week and then fill in the rest with work. What does Sabbath mean to you? How do you rest in the midst of labor so as to be drawn away from longing and anxiety and drawn toward God? While taking this Regent course, I was asked to consider many questions like these. I was also asked to consider how I encountered God in my workplace. I had to consider what in my work environment caused me to feel distant from God and what nourished my soul. Perhaps as I share a few of these personal thoughts, it will encourage you to discover in what ways God's Spirit infuses your daily work. Angela Morgan aptly wrote, I lost my soul today for the sake of scrubbing and buttons and trash. And she goes on to describe in her poem how she missed seeing the beauty around her because of an obsession to complete her many daily tasks. One of the challenges for me in the workplace is the endless list of tasks, the urgent and often unimportant demands of countless phone calls, requests, and emails, which often rob me of energy for the things of greatest value. Related to this is the way our culture, and perhaps even more so our Christian culture, overvalues work. My experience in working in Christian organizations is that overwork is valued more than leisure and Sabbath. One is somehow considered more spiritual when burning the midnight oil. Harley Russell Hochschild warns that we end up emotionally downsizing life when we overvalue our work. I don't want that to happen to me. A second issue that creates distress for me in the workplace is that of a misuse of power. Henry Nouwen writes profoundly that power offers an easy substitute for the hard task of love. It seems easier to be God than to love God. Easier to control people than to love people. Easier to own life than to love life. I keep longing for and working towards the day when our work environments reflect decentralized communities, communities that foster work as self-expression, as relatedness to society, and with reconciliation with nature. When power issues dominate my work environment, I find it stressful and spiritually depleting. There are other experiences in my work which stretch and nourish my soul. Cardinal Wozinski in All You Who Labor wrote, only in daily work do we have a perfect opportunity to observe ourselves. It is then indeed that we discover the good and the evil in ourselves and see our merits and faults. It has been through the blessing of having steady, meaningful employment that I have been able to recognize my gifts and abilities. I am by ability and at heart a teacher, and my central motivation is the transformation of lives. I love those aha moments when some new knowledge intersects with the student's experience and integration happens. Whether this is in the classroom or through a mentoring role in my office, I live for these moments. This passion for transformation has been there all along, I believe, but it's only in years of employment that I've been able to actually name this and to recognize the ways in which the Spirit of God is at work in me and through me. Another significant way that I've experienced God's presence is by means of what Paul Stevens called theology from below. I try to keep my eyes open to seeing where God is at work, whether in global events or in micro events in my own sphere of influence. In one class that I teach, Introduction to Conflict Management, I have been privileged to hear often excruciatingly painful stories of betrayal and broken relationships. But these students have also told stories of incredible courage through acts of reconciliation and forgiveness. I have experienced God's presence in the joys and the deep sorrows of the students who have entrusted me with their hearts. A last area where I experience God's presence is in the rhythm I feel called to attend to in my life. Following severe burnout from ministry, I have been learning to pay attention to my physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being. Joseph Pieper said, "The essence of leisure is not to assure that we may function smoothly, but rather to assure that we are enabled to remain fully human." I have had to learn this for my own health and well-being, and in order to better function in my home life and work life. Ultimately, the integration of spirituality and work for me lies in the questions that are too rarely asked. What does work do to the worker? And what does work do to the community? I believe these questions need to be asked for the sake of preserving human dignity. I want to keep asking myself, what is happening to me because of my work? How is it affecting my physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual health? I don't want to lose myself. I also want to keep asking questions about what is happening to the members of my community because of work. I believe the workplace needs to be characterized by love, caring loyalty to people, to places and structures, seeing the best in people, and seeking to meet needs. If my own well-being and spiritual formation are to be honored in my work environment, then the same needs to be true for all the members of my community. On my office door at the college, I have a simple summary of the Benedictine rule, which reminds me of the rhythms of life. Ultimately, for me, it is in the ordinary activities of my workday that I encounter the mystery of God, and I am grateful. Take care of everything. Revere one another. Eat and drink moderately. Pray where you work. Think about life deeply every day. Read. Sleep well. Don't demand the best of everything. Pray daily. Live as community. Amen.